Magic lamp? Wonder what happens when I rub it.
You have awakened me. I shall grant you 3 wishes.
My first wish is for economic development. My second wish is to save hours of travel time. And my third wish is to create safer roads.
You could have just wished for bus rapid transit and gotten all these things with one wish.
Make all your transit wishes come true. Learn more about bus rapid transit at indigo.net/bus-rapid-transit.
So they continue to meet about property taxes, but will anything meaningful get done? Let's find out. 93 WIBC, it's the Kendall and Casey Show. I'm Rob Bradson for Casey today. Let's go to one of the best of the business. You know her from the Indiana Capital Chronicle. The great Nikki Kelly joins us now. All right, Nikki, you want to get into the debate in just a moment. I want to talk about this interesting conversation you guys had with the governor candidates about the death penalty. But first, you guys reported on this panel that's meeting about taxation. And property taxes keeps coming up, but it doesn't seem like there's any really big idea. It just seems like a lot of potential tinkering, I guess, for lack of a better term. What's going on and where are they at?
Yeah, the House Ways and Means Chairman Jeff Thompson gave a very detailed presentation of areas in property taxes that he thinks are getting out of control. He talked about farmland. He talked about school referenda. And basically how they are making people's bills go up higher than expected. So it was a really interesting presentation. But yeah, they're not at all considering sort of the big picture of how we levy property taxes and are they fair? Is the assessment right? But they definitely are starting to feel people who are upset by these property taxes, and they're starting to talk more concretely about maybe some smaller ways that, you know, if they do 5 or 6 smaller things all together, it might make a difference.
Is the biggest issue here that they're stuck? And by that, I mean in the sense of, hey, we've created this world where the local governments are funded through the property taxes. We recognize they're out of control, but how do we undo this thing that we've not only made the law, but a part of our state constitution? It just seems like nobody has any idea on how to unstuck this thing, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and you know, it's not just Indiana. Property taxes are universally hated everywhere in the nation. Honestly, it's the least popular tax, but it's also the most dependable and reliable, which local governments need for services like police and fire and roads.
So that's the balancing act these guys have to do. And I thought it was interesting last night. You hear all these governor candidates mention property taxes, but other than Doden, you don't really get anything concrete. And even his, using the term concrete, is kind of a bad word to use, where it's like everybody says, okay, they're out of control. We are worried about people being able to stay in their homes, but what do we do? And it just seems like that is the point that everybody from Jeff Thompson to the governor candidates and everybody on down is at right now.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think the fact that they're talking about it, like last year, they weren't talking about it. So the property tax anger is growing, and I think lawmakers are feeling pressure. You're seeing that in the governor's race. You know, 2 months ago, no one was talking about property taxes in the governor's race.
Yeah, Nikki Kelly joins us now from Indiana Capital Chronicle. We'll get to the debate last night in just a second. But you guys over at Indiana Capital Chronicle had a very interesting piece on the death penalty in the state of Indiana. You talked to these candidates for governor about the death penalty. Can I tell us why you guys did this and what the results of your interviews were?
Well, it's just something we've noticed. I mean, the fact is that right now, Indiana might as well not have a death penalty. We haven't executed anyone since, I think, 2009. We can't get the drugs to do it. You know, it's very hard to get any of the drug manufacturers to sell the drugs because they don't want to be associated with that. So states are all over the country have had trouble. But, you know, we have several people on death row who have exhausted their appeals. They're just sitting there. And so I think the question that needs to be asked of the governor candidates, of lawmakers, is why do we have a death penalty on the books if we're not going to use it, you know? And so I wanted to talk to them about, do they support the death penalty? Would they be okay with repealing it? If we're not going to repeal it, is it time to consider another method? There are some states moving forward with a new hypoxia method. Now, I'm not saying I support any of that or either way, but I do think it's something that's not being discussed at all. And we also threw in a question to try to square pro-life beliefs on abortion also with you know, putting someone to death.
So what, was there any consensus from the candidates about this, or was everybody kind of on their own? Did everybody have a different opinion, or was there some sort of universally shared beliefs?
They all universally supported the death penalty in egregious cases. To be fair, it seemed like they didn't really understand the problem. And I don't mean that negatively. I just think it was something that hadn't come up in their, you know, discussions and tracing the state. And so they didn't really have a lot of concrete things to say. They would say, well, we'll redouble our efforts to get the drugs. Well, okay.
Yeah. Well, that's why I thought this was an interesting piece, Nikki, because you hit on the problem, which is you have these people who have gone through the legal process. They are set to be executed. And we go through all of that expense, which, because it's markedly more expensive to try a death penalty case, obviously, than a regular case. And you have the victims' families that then have to sit there and wonder if this is going to ever happen. And it's not a want to sort of thing. It's a we can't get the thing. And it doesn't appear you're going to be able to get the thing anytime in the near future. So isn't it? I think it's a very worthwhile question to say, what are you going to do about this?
Yeah. And I mean, some people might argue that having a person sit there on death row, they could literally be executed any day. But there's one person who's been there for 29 years. Like, their appeals are exhausted and they're just sitting there. Is that cruel and unusual punishment of its own?
Nikki Kelly from the Indiana Capital Chronicle is our guest. All right, let's talk about the debate last night. I think it's fascinating. There are very few things that the conservatives and the establishment of the Republican Party and kind of the mainstream media all universally agree on. It seemed now different people had different tenors on this, but from the candidates and their representatives to the conservatives to the establishment to the media, everybody thought that was kind of a train wreck last night. What say you?
Yeah, it did not go well in any manner. And I don't mean just what people saw on TV, though that was frustrating. Some of the questions were confusing. The John Schwanes, who I am good friends with, he's an incredibly intelligent, wonderful person. And his idea of having people raise their hands for like quick yes, no answers did not go over well with the candidates. But then also behind the scenes, there was a lot of confusion. There were, you know, I heard from three different campaigns that they were told yesterday there would not be closing statements. But then all of a sudden there were closing statements. The moderator at one time actually gave Mike Braun's answer for why he raised gas taxes. I mean, it was very cringeworthy. It was not a good outing. And I know there's a lot of talk today about this could be the end for the Indiana Debate Commission. I hope that one bad debate doesn't do that, because I do think they've performed a great service. They're all volunteers who put that on. And so hopefully we can get past that, but it was truly pretty bad.
Well, and so this is my question to you, because obviously you've been in this business for a long time and you've always been seen as a very fair, you know, impartial journalist who just writes the facts. And I realize that the questions that are going to be asked are not necessarily the questions that I would want in every single question. Though, by the way, for the record, the question on property taxes from Brownsburg was not me. Everybody seems to think it was me. That was absolutely 100% not me, though that was hilarious. But the question is, you've done these debates before. You've moderated debates. You've moderated panels. Was it just a lack of preparation? I mean, this just seemed like every part of this was a disaster.
I think John Schwanes has a very kind of low-key, personal style and more conversational, and I just don't know that it worked for a debate setting, and I think that might have been part of it. How the questions were worded a few times, it wasn't. There was one where he brought up a study that a report that the Heritage Foundation came out with. Well, I don't know that it's particularly fair to throw some report at a bunch of candidates who may not have even read that report.
Right.
Do you agree with them? So that's the kind of thing I'm mentioning. Some of the questions were great. There were some good back and forth, but overall, I think I called it uneven in my.
You're so nice. Hey, before we let you go, Casey and I got into this conversation yesterday, and it was about covering the state house and covering government. And you guys at Capital Chronicle, even though I don't agree with a lot, you know, many of your opinion pieces, you're excluded. I think the straight reporting is very valuable, and you guys do a really good job of putting information out there that otherwise wouldn't be out there. How do you guys grow in a world where you're not in the print industry? Like IndyStar used to be, it went to everybody's house. So whatever IndyStar was talking about, people knew about it, and that's what they were talking about. How do you and these other online publications that are now popping up that are covering the state house, how do you grow to reach people outside of the people who are really into politics and government?
Yeah, we're coming up on our 2-year, I guess, anniversary, birthday, whatever. You know, we're trying to think about that, too. Our model is a little different in that because our stuff can run in newspapers and does run in newspapers, radio, TV, statewide, that's the way we grow partially. So people might see a story in South Bend and say, oh, what is this Indiana Capital Chronicle? And then go to the website and sign up to the newsletter type thing. But, you know, that's as a nonprofit with a Creative Commons license, that's sort of the model we use, is we're trying to create partners around the state so that everyone can be more informed about what's happening here in Indianapolis in your state government.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Like I said, we need more people doing what you guys are doing. She's one of the best in the business, Nikki Kelly. Find her at IndianaCapitalChronicle.com. Thank you, Nikki.
Great. Have a good day.
Yeah, thank you. 93 WIBC, it's Kendall and Casey Show.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
This is the Kendall and Casey Show, 93 WIBC. I'm Rob. Kev's here. Brad's in for Casey today. So, going back to the governor's debate last night, Brad, obviously the moderator was a train wreck and a total disgrace, but there was one interesting question that came up, and you could tell none of the candidates wanted any part of it, and you and I were just shooting the breeze, you know, during a break, and I said, we should have this conversation because it's actually a super interesting one, where you can see everyone's side, and I'm not sure exactly what the right answer is. And I thought it was an example, the way the candidates didn't want any part of the question, where we're so soundbite driven now, and we're so instantaneous reaction driven now, that the candidates are afraid or appear afraid to have a conversation about a really important topic where everybody should have a seat at the table on this, and we actually are only going to come up with a quality answer if everybody's heard.
Right. It was a great moral and ethical question that did not fully get answered. I had to go to my eight pages of notes to see how they answered it. So the question was about in vitro fertilization.
Right.
So, I mean, clearly all the candidates up there on that stage are going to say, I'm pro-life.
Right.
This question specifically was about, how do you feel about destroying embryos that are left over?
Right. So for those of you who may not be familiar, for people who have trouble conceiving, they can go through this in vitro fertilization process. And I'm simplifying a very complex thing. And there's some scientist somewhere that's going to be screaming at the radio, but we've only got a finite amount of time. And basically, when you go through the IVF process, it's my understanding they try to harvest as many eggs
yes.
as possible and quality sperm as possible. And they try to obviously insert the sperm. And again, I realize it's way more complex than this, but I'm just trying to super simplify
right.
it. That they try to insert the sperm into the egg to create a life. And the more eggs you have, the more eggs that they can find, quality eggs, or there's a technical
term. They harvest the eggs.
Right. The more apt you are to get human life, because it gives them more opportunities to insert sperm into the egg and produce life. So if they can harvest 8 eggs, then you've got 8 bites at the apple if it doesn't, you know, work right away. However, the discussion has come out of this Alabama Supreme Court ruling that says, hey, those embryos are human life. And now people are having this discussion about, well, am I destroying human life? I'm trying to create life, but I can't
raise 8 children if I harvest 8 eggs? And if I have to see every one of these, you know, embryos through, why? Well, I can't afford to do that. I'm trying to create a human life. And if I can't discard the air quote extras, well, then I don't even want to participate in this. So are we being anti-life by saying you have to go through with all of them? And it really is a very complex conversation about what it means to be pro-life. And I just think, I thought it was a missed opportunity last night to have a real debate that could impact the conversation, because people are so afraid of anything that might score them bad on a mailer or might end up in a TV ad or whatever.
Yes. So based on how I scored it, which none of them directly answered,
right?
It, 4 of the 5 kind of got around to giving their opinion. So by my count, Chambers, Hill, Doden, and Crouch all said, yeah, if you destroy the extras, that's fine. Rittenhour did not answer the question. So, but it, yeah, it's such a dilemma. So, like, my daughter and son-in-law went through this.
Yeah.
Both of them were found to be carriers of the cystic fibrosis gene. So yeah. They didn't want to have a child with cystic fibrosis. So they harvested like 20 eggs. Then they fertilized them. The lab went through and then checked out all those. And of those 20, 12 of them came back positive for cystic fibrosis. And even my daughter, she got a call one day at school from the lab saying, hey, we found 12 of them were had cystic fibrosis. We destroyed them. And she's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You just destroyed them? But so she felt some sort of a connection to them.
But the premise of what your daughter and your son-in-law are trying to do is create life.
They're trying to create life because
doesn't exist.
Right. So now, after the process, we have a granddaughter. So they implanted, I think, 3 or 4 of those remaining eggs. The first 3 didn't take. The 4th one did. So now there's a granddaughter. There's still 4 remaining eggs. And they've been wrestling around with, what do we do with these?
Right.
And my wife likes to say, if you can freeze it, it's not life. If you can freeze it and it'll last 20 years or 30 years and you can thaw it out, that was not life.
And it's reasonable people can disagree on the topic. But my point is, clearly we're at a point in our society where we need to have this conversation.
We do.
We need to figure out what we are and what we value. And everybody needs to be heard. And I just thought yesterday it was a great example of these politicians being politicians instead of saying, I will lead on this and here's what I think and here's why, so that we can start having this conversation. Because clearly even the Republican Party, who, whatever else you want to say about Indiana Republican Party, they are the party of life. I mean, the abortion bill was largely very good. It was a hard vote to take. They stood up on that. Note, it's 10/25 on April the 24th. I'm saying something nice about the Indiana Republican Party. They did a pretty darn good job on that anti, abortion bill, that pro-life bill. And I just think the longer we don't lean into this, because I look at this and I'm incredibly pro-life. And thankfully, my wife and I, very early in our marriage, were able to conceive a child. And knock on wood, that child has been very healthy and we're very blessed. But what if there is a point where we can't and we want to create more life? And we're both incredibly pro-life people. You know, how do we work through this? And I just think this is a topic that many, many people, because clearly science has made immense advancements. God has blessed these people in these fields to be able to learn about this and be able to help life come into this world where otherwise there wasn't or wouldn't have been. And there were, for generations before, people just wouldn't have been able to have kids. So I'm willing to hear all sides on this. I totally see all sides on this. And I just thought that was a real missed opportunity by those candidates last night to not weigh in and kind of lead on this discussion.
Right. Which clearly they hadn't been briefed that this was potentially a topic, which I guess to some degree is good. That way, you know, they're not coming up with talking points. There certainly needs to be more conversations like we are having right now, where reasonable people sit down and have a reasonable conversation as opposed to just beating your chest and, you know, throwing out talking points.
Because I think it's a hard thing to say, if I can't raise 8 lives, which you could potentially, I mean, sometimes they find 2 eggs. So like you said, you're in the case of your daughter, it was 20. And I mean, if we're saying, if you can't, and I'm working it through in my own head out loud, which I'm sure most people are doing on a topic like this. If we're saying if you can't raise 8 lives, then are you anti-life if you can create 1 or 2 that you can raise. And I just think even for the pro-life people, this is a real struggle right now, like it is for me, because I want as many lives as possible. I want as many happy lives as possible. But I also see the argument, if you're a person who believes that life begins at conception, that's the part of conception. So it's a conversation we need to have, and I hope we get more of it going forward and people are willing to take whatever political blow or whatever they perceive might come with it and just state their opinions and let's get it out there.
For our listeners, if you want to call in and leave us a voicemail, number is 317-684-8444. Leave us your opinion and you might hear yourself on the air tomorrow.
Yeah, that'll be very curious to hear what you have to say. All right, speaking of voicemails, they're coming up next. It's Kendall and Casey Show, 93 WIBC.
It's time to hear from you. Kendall and Casey present Voicemails. Brought to you by QC Kinetics for non-surgical regenerative medicine treatment at 317-559-PAIN.
Oh, we got a new intro. How fabulous, Kevin.
Yeah, does that make you want to dance?
You're really spicing it up for the audience.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin's playing the funk today.
317-684-8444. That's the phone number if you'd like to be a part of the show. 317-684-8444. I'm Rob. Brad's in for Casey today. Okay, so one of the things that came up last night at that governor's debate, and there was a lot of discussion when that moderator would get out of the way and stop injecting himself into the whole debate process, was about the IEDC. And about the amount of money that is taken from poor and middle class people every year to the tune of $500 million every 2 years. And that money is largely used to attract some of the richest, most powerful corporations in the world. You're getting your notes out.
That was question number three.
For those who have missed earlier in the show, Brad took 8 pages of notes off the debate last night. And look, the IEDC is... I mean, they hit Chambers. It was clearly they were going after Chambers on this.
Sure.
And they hit him pretty good on it. And what was Chambers going to do? Go, yeah, you're right. It's a totally corrupt, terrible organization. And sorry for partying. And I think it's interesting how Doden tries to spin out, because, of course, he was IEDC director before Chambers, are going, well, it was different when I was running the show. And it's like, no, you guys are both super connected, super rich people, which is why you're in that. We're put in those positions. And your job is to bring mega corporations to the state of Indiana. Yeah. And you're using our money, you're taking money from regular people, and you're using our money to bring these megacorps to the state of Indiana.
That's exactly what they're doing, which it was interesting because it came up, should the state be acquiring all this land and then giving it to people?
Right.
And that's a fantastic question.
And Rittenhour hit the nail on the head, which is there's many problems with this, but one of the biggest problems is, and we had, you know, some of these farmers out in Boone County on our show last year talking about this. It's not that they're coming in declaring eminent domain, but what they do is these lawyers and state reps or whatever, or representatives from these companies come in and they say, okay, and they make it clear to you in their own language, you don't have to sell to us. You can choose to fight us, or we can give you this exorbitant amount of money for your land, and you can fight us, and we'll see how that ends in the end. And these farmers who came in last year basically saying, people are walking out going, well, if I fight them, I could lose anyway, or I could take this exorbitant amount of money because it's being backed up by taxpayer money, and I could just leave. And most people are choosing to just take the money and leave.
Well, even if they win, there's still an island in the midst of this giant development. I mean, their farmstead will never be the same.
You're exactly right. The character of the land goes away. And so somebody called about this.
Hey, Indiana is a haven for tramp corporations. Just look at the deals these corporations get when they come here. They don't have any taxes to pay. The General Assembly don't have any jurisdiction over them. Yeah, they good for a while until the good times run out. All they do is come into the state, drain the resources, then threaten for more. If they don't get them, they leave for another sucker. Indiana is nothing but a patsy and a haven for tramp corporations.
Now that was our buddy Larry, I think.
That was crazy Larry.
I don't think there was a whole bunch of crazy in what he said.
No, I'm just going to say, mark the time, 10:37 a.m. on Wednesday, April 24th. I'm agreeing with Larry.
Look, he's not totally accurate in the sense of when I used to always get into this with people about abatements in a community when like a warehouse would be built. Yes, depending on what your economic development standards are in your community, and we had very tight ones when I was running Brownsburg, but there is an abatement process by which those taxes are phased in.
Right.
Nobody ever doesn't pay taxes. That's a huge misnomer. Those buildings pay taxes from day one. Now, it could be 10 years before it pays its full tax rate. The argument is, would you year one rather have 10% of $100 million assessed value, or would you rather have just $0? And there's genuine arguments on both sides. However, that building will always pay some taxes. But when you factor in abatements and now this money that's coming from the IEDC, he's not wrong in the sense of you can have a 10-year plan to milk the heck out of this and really, I don't know if subvert is the right word.
Well, it's kind of the
a lot of your what otherwise would be your tax obligation.
It's the Walmart plan. The way Walmart works is they'll go into a smaller town like a Rushville or Greenfield or whatever. They will get a developer to build them a spec building that is bigger than everything else in town. They will have a short-term lease. Well, then at the end of 5 years or 10 years, Walmart says, all right, we want you to cut our rent in half. And the landlord's like, nope, can't do that. It's going to stay the same. Well, then they'll go out and find somebody else to build them a spec building. And that's why suddenly you have all these empty buildings that used to be Walmarts, because there's nobody else that wants a building that large in these communities.
Yeah, the logical answer to all of this is that if we just created a tax environment that was beneficial to everyone, people would want to come here.
Correct.
Because it benefits everyone. But what the Republicans have done, especially under Holcomb, I mean, it's been on steroids under Holcomb, is they take money from other people, regular people who don't have power or influence, and they create this environment by which these already large corporations will benefit immensely. And we've had, I think State Affairs was the website that did that article about how there's the IEDC is not fulfilling the job obligations that are in many cases being promised. It's hard to get information. Curtis, I think, called it a quasi-government agency and laughed at that phrase last night. It is. The IEDC is awful. And the next governor needs to blow that thing up, because the IEDC appears to be working for the rich and the powerful and the bright shiny. And how many bright shiny objects can we connect? And the next governor, and I have no faith Braun's going to do this, given who's kind of running his campaign and who he's connected to, but they need to blow that IEDC up, because it is bad news.
Well, the Leap District, I think, is a project too far for some of us.
Yeah.
And yeah, they flex their muscle. I still have a moral problem taking prime farm ground out of production to do this. They could have done this in Tippecanoe County or somewhere else, but for whatever reason, they wanted proximity.
Well, and you're never going to convince me that that's a giant coincidence they chose Boone County in Lebanon, given who the mayor is and who he's connected to. And but we'll get into that. We've got into that before. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the convention that's coming up, because let's face it, this governor's race has been a snooze fest. The real race, Brad, is going to begin after we know who the governor nominee is, because then we go to convention, and hot dang, that lieutenant governor's race is going to be off the charts.
Get the popcorn.
There will be nothing boring once from May to the middle of June. And somebody did ask, we've obviously talked a lot about this, that whoever it is, because it ain't going to be Rittenhour, and it ain't going to be Curtis. Sorry, they'd be my two choices, but it ain't going to happen. And so whether it's Braun, whether it's Doden, whether it's Crouch, or whether it's Chambers, you can't trust any of those four. And the only chance you got of getting anything done out of the executive branch is to have somebody in the number two slot who isn't beholden to anybody.
Yeah, I've run for lieutenant governor before. Should I announce my intentions now?
Is Rainwater... They already picked a lieutenant governor, didn't they?
Yeah, the Republicans still need to pick one.
That's right. You should get in there.
I'm a free agent.
Yeah, and you have experience.
I do have experience, exactly. I can stand on that stage.
Somebody called with a question about how the convention and the delegates actually work.
Hey, just had a question. How do the delegates select a lieutenant governor? Is it that they take a vote and the majority, whoever has the majority, automatically gets it? Or do they have to get like 50% plus one, so they take a vote, the lowest one drops out, and they keep doing that until somebody gets 50% plus one? Just wondered how that process works.
Yes. So the winner is whoever gets to 50% plus one. So let's say that there are 1,800 delegates, which I think is the number. The winner for the lieutenant governor's race at convention is, and it's actually based on the amount of votes cast.
Right.
So one of the big issues, and this you've seen this in close races over the years, I think like the treasurer's race was decided by three votes on the third or fourth ballot. People went home.
Right.
So you have fewer people. So one of the challenges at a convention is not only getting your people elected delegate, which is going on right now, it's getting them then to pay the fee to the Republican Party, because there's whatever, $150 or whatever you got to pay. Then you got to show up to the convention and getting people to stay all day, because sometimes it'll take 3, 4, 5 ballots depending on how many people are running. So if there's only two people running for lieutenant governor, let's say Braun has a handpicked Toady and Micah, then somebody's going to get 50% plus one on the first ballot. But if you get 3, 4, 5 people in, which it could be, and nobody gets 50% plus one of the total votes cast on the first ballot, then somebody drops off and everybody votes again until somebody gets 50% plus one.
Now, I do like the Libertarians at their convention. They always have none of the above as a valid choice.
I love that. I love that. That's actually really smart. As usual, the Libertarians leading the way. One more call real quick. Yesterday, we got into a long conversation about what could be the death of the self-scan stations, because apparently there's all sorts of thievery going on these days.
And not everybody's honest.
Shocking, right, Brad? So now companies are saying, well, it may end up just being cheaper from a loss prevention standpoint to pay somebody to, you know, man the scanning aisles now and go back to the way things used to be. And our old pal Trucker John had a story about being forced to use the employee scanner.
Back in the day when I was younger, around, you know, my late teens, I would have loved self-checkout at the Walmart, because there was one time way back when I was going through the checkout. It was probably about 11 midnight or so, and I was going in to buy a couple of things. And one of those things happened to be a box of male birth control enhancements, you know, condoms. And I wasn't really paying attention. The Walmart, you know, in my town only had one checkout open late at night. I just walked up, threw my stuff onto the counter, and wasn't really paying too much attention. And that's when I discovered the lady working the checkout was usually a day shift worker, but had been called in to cover the night shift. And it was my girlfriend at the time's mother. So that was an interesting conversation that I had to have. Yeah. Not my proudest moment.
You know, I love Trucker John because he has no shame about anything that's ever happened in his life. He's more of an open book than we are, Brad, and we're the radio people.
That's why he's radio gold.
That's right. All right, let's take a break. Hammer's going to join us next. We're talking about that big Pacer win last night. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was.
It's Kendall Casey Show, 93 WIBC.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Who it is. You're Jason Hammer. Hello. It's Kendall and Casey Show. Brad's in for Casey today.
Gotta let that Elvis kick in a little bit. There you go.
You look like a man on a mission. What do you have for us?
So last night, that dumpster fire of a debate took place between the gubernatorial candidates sans Mike Braun.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Braun was in D.C., voting against all the crap that the Duke of Spendingburg was voting for.
Yeah, thankfully the moderator was acting on behalf of Mike Braun throughout much of the debate, so his talking points got revealed.
But I started thinking to myself, what would Mike Braun have said had he been there?
Oh, boy.
So that's when we reached out to AI Mike Braun. Now, again, this is not the real Mike Braun. This is AI Mike Braun.
Right, that's correct.
But this is what I would have loved to have heard him say in his opening statement yesterday.
So, which one of you losers is going to finish second? I mean, look at this group. It looks like the worst table at every wedding. Chambers thinks Holcomb deserved an A for his time in office. I know 420 was a few days ago, but he may still be high. Silent Suzanne sat right next to Lockdown McGee and didn't say a word. Jamie Ridenour's highlight was debating against Rob Kendall. I think I speak on behalf of all my supporters when I say that I hope Rob gets the worst case of herpes the planet has ever seen. Let's see who else is on the stage tonight. Curtis Hill wears way too much cologne, and I don't even know who Eric Doden is. I thought he worked at a McDonald's or something. I could show up and debate, but I've got more important things to do. Have fun with your JV debate tonight. Mike Braun, out.
AI Mike Braun.
So strong. That's great. Hey, speaking of strong, Pacers. Pacers strong last night.
That was a playoff effort. I saw playoff intensity last night. Game one, they looked scared to be there.
Yeah.
Anybody not named Pascal Siakam looked like they were terrified to be on the court. Last night started kind of slow, but then something clicked, and I never thought it would be this person. Like, Siakam's doing his thing. Yeah. You expect him to be the dude. But it was Andrew Nembhard who decided, you know what? We're not going to put up with this crap anymore. He was getting in the face of people. He was talking trash, getting technical fouls.
Yeah, I love it.
Andrew Nembhard, of all people, brought the playoff intensity last night, and that changed the whole attitude.
I love it. Great game. Playoff basketball is great. I don't watch hardly any NBA all year long, but I will always watch the playoffs because those guys start trying. They play defense. They foul hard. The refs let them actually play some defense. I love NBA playoff basketball.
So I'm hoping the Pacers now, with a little taste of what real playoff basketball is like, bring that here. And if you're going to the game on Friday, this is the first time there's been a rocking home playoff game in a long time.
Yep.
Bring the pain, man. Make that place Thunderdome. Let's rock it.
Hey, that sparked an interesting conversation. I think Nigel might have been passed out by this point, so it was really just you and me going back and forth. That's the way it works in our group chat, Brad. Nigel's strong for about the first 30 minutes, and then it's just a tail off till there's
just stops making sense, and then it's gone.
And that's usually around 8:45.
So you and I got into an interesting conversation about during the basketball game. If WIBC were to put a basketball team together, could we beat the best that the fan has to offer in terms of a basketball team?
So this would be the starting lineup that we have here.
Yeah, so for WIBC at guard, it would be Rob Kendall and Kurt Darling. The center would be John Herrick. The forward would be Jason Hammer. And then I think we went with the other forward. Did we decide on Matt Baer?
I think Matt Baer provides better defensive help.
We initially went with Nigel, and then we realized what a dumpster fire that would be. So we went with the more physically fit, seemingly more athletic.
Nigel would be like Vin Baker, former Bucks star. All the potential is there, but there's a drinking problem.
And then the fan, we went with Jimmy Cook and Andy Sweeney as the guards, Jake Query as the center, JMV and Kevin Bowen as the forwards.
So they've got a pretty good front court. Yeah. I think JMV may be the best player on the court.
Because you know he plays pickup basketball down in that gym all the time.
Right, and he plays a lot. So the question is, can our backcourt here at WIBC of you and Kurt Darling run the backcourt off of the fan?
Well, I could run circles around Sweeney. That's no problem at all. Jimmy Cook strikes me as someone who once did something athletic in his life, though.
I feel like if I'm tasked with trying to shut down JMV, like, I could be a defender, but then you lose me offensively in the post. Yeah, I just wear down.
Now, Herrick is a giant of a human, and I think he's very competitive. Like, his mom runs a gymnastics studio. So you know he would be the sort of guy that his father would berate him if he only scored 4 points in the game. He would make something positive happen.
I think he would make life miserable for Jake Query.
Yeah, Query would quit too, right?
Right.
Query strikes me as the sort of guy who would just start barking at his teammates and walk off the floor.
Query would say, this is stupid, and walk off the court.
And they give you some lecture about the 1992 high school basketball finals.
But the weak man on the floor is Andy Sweeney, right?
Absolutely. Like, and we love Sweeney.
You or Kurt Darling have to attack Andy Sweeney and just hope that I can minimize the effort that JMV is going to give
him. Yeah. Okay, Kurt, you think you could take Andy Sweeney? Absolutely.
I just have to run past him.
Well, you did. You did. Yeah, because you did athletic things, right? In high school,
I only did the decathlon in college, so no big deal.
I think we got a chance.
Oh, yeah, we could. We got to make this
absolutely
happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What's coming up this afternoon?
We got a lot of special guests coming in studio. It's a star-studded show. We've got two contests to give away, and nobody has more fun than we do. We start at 3:06.
All right, I got a social media etiquette question for Brad when we come back. It's Kendall and Casey Show, 93 WIBC.